Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the ADVFN Podcast, episode 248. Why not tell a friend? Coming up on the podcast, Rodney Hobson, financial speaker, writer, and market commentator, talks about Greece, Burberry, Halfords, and JD Weatherspoon. He also chats about his portfolio and some of the stocks he's looking to top up on or buy. Plus, I have the micro macro news and the broker forecast. But first, here's a little homework for you, a little test, see if you can do this. Okay, so my philosophy is quite simple. Buy a good company at a good price. What's a good company? Okay, find a company like this. If you can find a company that fits this criteria, I want to know about it, okay? So, four things. Look for a company that revenue has been increasing for the last 5 years. Also, look for a company that's profit's been increasing the last 5 years. This company also has a dividend of at least 2.5%, which has to be fully covered. Plus, look for a company that has a PE below 20. So, revenue increasing, profit increasing, dividend 2.5% minimum, fully covered, and also a PE of less than 20. If you can find a company like that, that's a good company. Then all you need to do is buy it at a good price. See if you can find one. No prizes for the winner. And joining me on the podcast right now is Rodney Hobson, a financial speaker, writer, and author of investment books, including Shares Made Simple, The Beginner's Guide to the Stock Market. Are you all right, Rodney?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent stuff. Now, it's been interesting. It always is. The market, I find the market fascinating. I find finance fascinating because it does make the world go round sort of thing. But we're in a situation today. It's really odd that, you know, Tsipras has gone to his parliament. He's trying to push this deal through. And yet overnight, the IMF came out. I don't know if you saw this, saying this deal and Greek debt is not sustainable. And I'm thinking, hang on, are you trying to scupper the deal? And they criticise the EU, really. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on the whole Greek thing, Rodney?
Well, just when you think that Greek debt is settled, at least for the time being, and after all, even if this all goes through, we're simply buying time. It isn't the settlement of the whole issue. It'll crop up again, and this, is, of course, what's been happening over and over again, and we've all got rather tired of it. And in fact, I'm going to criticise the IMF, which I think is always behind the door. The IMF criticised austerity here and said it wouldn't work, and it then had to admit it had worked pretty well here. And yet it was at the same time saying we should have austerity in the Eurozone. And you think, hang on, does the IMF really know what's going on? And now the IMF's been involved in all these talks, and all of a sudden, it's occurred to the IMF that the Greeks have so much debt they might not be able to pay it off. Well, I think that's what most of us have been saying for quite some time. So the IMF seems to me to be completely behind the door with this, but they are right in one sense that this is not a final solution. This doesn't really solve anything, and Greek debt, almost certainly some of it at least, will have to be written off.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at exactly. I'm thinking they're saying the GDP will be, the debt will be 200% of their GDP, which is unsustainable. Yep. Apparently, the IMF. You're right. Where have they been for the last 5 years? Why say at the last moment? It's just ridiculous. And I'm just seeing the markets here. Look at the markets. You know, it did start off in negative territory. Right now, I'm looking at the FTSE. It's 0.2% up. And a couple of my stocks are up nicely. And I'm just thinking, hang on, are they taking this too much in their stride? Because I understand the Greek people, they have to sort of, their banks aren't opening, they haven't got any liquidity there, they've got no money, so they've got to sort of say yes to the deal. I think Tsipras was saying yesterday, last night on his live television thing, that, it's a case of, it's not a good deal, I don't like it, but, you know, what option have we got? And that's it, isn't it, really?
Well, in terms of the UK stock stock market, I mean, certainly we've had a pretty fair drop from, what, about 7,100 points down to below 6,700. So a lot of the Greek problem is factored into the stock market here. It is a comparatively small economy. A country dropping out of the euro will certainly send shockwaves and will certainly upset investors. But I think that the London stock market has fallen quite far enough to take account of the Greek problem. And a lot of commentators have been saying, and I'm inclined to agree with them, well, what's happening in China is rather more important than Greece. And China, incidentally, this morning announced that we're still growing, the economy there is still growing at 7%, which is slightly better than people thought. A far bigger economy than Greece. I know it's further away, but it's important to the whole world economy. So perhaps that's more important. I think that we're getting a bit more blasé about Greece, A, because we've heard so much about it over so many years. Secondly, because everybody's thinking, well, we can't, nothing will ever get sorted. But also, bad news is factored into stock prices. So I think that we'll possibly see the market rising again, irrespective of what happens in Greece.
Yeah, but you're right. China is, of course, more important. Like I said, it did come in above expectations. And I think there's certain things that were quite good. Consumer spending was good, apparently, and fixed income investments quite good. Factories were down a little bit, dragged it down. But apart from that, it's fine. But I think we're going to be with this Greek problem until either the Merkel accepts they need a cut in their debt or they exit the euro. And otherwise, I think we'll see this problem come out every 6 months, every year we'll have a renegotiation or Greece threatening to pull out because they can't afford it. So until they do pull out, I think this problem will be with us for our entire lifetimes, don't you think?
Well, you're probably younger than me. I think I'll be here with my lifetime anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, certainly, I think that we were talking a moment ago about whether people are getting blasé and whether it's washing over them now. I should think that most of the European leaders are getting rather fed up with this as well. And despite the great determination to hold the European Union together and to move on to into a greater closeness and a federal state, and greater financial harmony and so forth, I think that perhaps some of the leaders, particularly Angela Merkel, are now beginning to realise that perhaps it isn't worth the gamble, that perhaps it's better to let Greece go and stand somebody dropping out of the euro than it is to continue with the farce as it is. The main problem here is not just Greece, but the fact that Greece and one or two other countries at the time were allowed into the euro when they didn't meet the criteria. And such was the enthusiasm to get the euro going. It's not, to my mind, it's not the euro's fault. It's not the euro that's the problem. It's the fact that people were allowed to bend the rules and continue bending the rules. And this is the other side of the coin. See, people have been saying if Greece dropped out of the euro and went back to the drachma and devalued and all this, well, this doesn't solve the problem. The problem is Greek debt is so big they can't afford to service it, let alone repay it. And there's also sure the issues of where the money's been squandered and so forth. These are issues that need to be sorted, whether Greece is in the euro or not. So I'm sorry to say, even if Greece drops out of the euro, this isn't the end of the story. There's more needed.
Yeah, well, let's move closer to home. Let's talk about stocks and shares in London Stock Exchange. So for yourself, Rodney, I mean, in your portfolio, how diversified are you? I mean, how many stocks do you hold?
I hold 16 stocks. I started investing. I started building this current portfolio up in 2009. The market was already recovering at that point, so I can't say I got on the bottom market. And what I've been doing, I've been using up my ISA entitlement each year, so I've been adding about, on average, about £10,000 a year to it. This year I'm going to be adding the 15. I try to stick the shares I've already got where I think there are still opportunities, but over the years, I keep adding one or two stocks each year. So the portfolio is growing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think it's good to try and find new shares that I feel are underpriced or offering new opportunities.
And do you, when you buy a stock, for example, I mean, do you stick to there's a couple of questions here, but do you stick to a certain size company? What are the criteria that you look for in a company?
I look for a company that, A, I feel the shares are undervalued a company that I think is going to continue to grow and a company that is looking for to pay dividends. These are the sort of criterion. Now, I don't stick to anything hard and fast, and perhaps I should. I think there's a lot of merit in saying, write down what you want and stick to it. But I don't think one should be too rigid in the stock market, and I think you should look for opportunities. Normally, as I say, I look for a company that's paying a dividend. I have occasionally picked up companies that weren't paying a dividend, but I felt would start doing so. I've got two house builders in my portfolio, for example, Barrett and Taylor Wimpey, who both were not paying dividends when I bought them, but I felt the housing market was bound to recover. And in fact, I've seen very considerable growth in the share prices. That wasn't my reason for buying. My reason was to pick up dividends in the future. So I got a benefit that I wasn't expecting. But you see, to me, dividends are important because in the end, if a company doesn't pay dividends, it will in the end start to see its share price fall, because what's the point in investing in it?
Yeah, and are you sort of a buy and hold man, or do you have a certain period of time as how long you hold them for, or do you look for a certain upside potential then get out? How long do you hold for generally?
No, I'm a long-term investor. Mm. If people feel that they're very good at spotting when the bottom of the market comes around, when the top of the market isn't getting in and out, good luck to them. I think that very few people are capable of doing that, and I don't attempt it because you've got to be watching the shares so carefully. I'm very much a long-term man. I rarely sell, and I sell only if I've got some specific reason, if something crops up. I felt that, for example, that Vodafone shares have got too big a slice of my portfolio, and when they sold out their American stake, I was a bit cautious about that. I felt they were going into Europe where growth was not so good, so I sold some of my holding then. So I do it only, I sell only if there's a specific reason. Most investors, small or large, tend to sell out for a quick profit instead of letting their gains keep mounting, and then cling on to shares that are losing money far longer than they should. So if a share goes up, I don't sit down and think, oh, I'm going to take my profit now. I think, are shares going up because this is a good company? After all, that's why I bought them, because I thought it was a good company. So if my shares have gone up, for me, is generally a reason to hold on. So yes, I'm a long-term investor, and I certainly don't buy and sell rapidly. When all said and done, every time you buy and sell, you pay a charge to your stockbroker, and every time you buy, you're paying stamp duty. So every transaction actually costs you money.
Yeah,
so I want a good reason for making a transaction before I do it.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You are doing what stats suggest. They say time in the market always outperforms trying to time the market. So if you miss the best 10 days in the last 10 years, you've been significantly down. And also, it's been proven that about 90% of people who day trade lose money. So, and coincidentally, some of the best stocks I've owned for several years, and they keep growing, and I can pay dividends. And I think it's odd how people, and you're right, jumping in, jumping out incurs costs, which come off your bottom line, essentially. So it's costs you don't need to do. So yeah, it's odd how people, for some reason, try and go for a quick profit, when essentially, if you're a long-term investor, you look at a company you think is undervalued, and you have the confidence to stay in there, and it pays off, I think, doesn't it?
But I think that a lot of people who don't really understand the stock market very well think it's very clever to be buying and selling. They think that the professionals are always doing this, and I think that's erroneous. I think very successful fund managers tend to invest for a long time. They don't buy and sell quickly. But the more you buy and sell rapidly, the more you're going to, likely you are to lose money. And I think that a lot of people think, oh, this is clever, aren't you, and how smart I am. You're not. You're showing how smart you're not. Mm-hmm. In the end, a lot of your income, probably half your income, possibly even in times more, is coming from dividends. And this is what you should be looking at. Don't get obsessed with the movements of the stock market. Nobody knows how things will move tomorrow. And if a company comes up with, say, a profit warning, well, the shares drop immediately. And most people just won't have the time to sell quickly, and most people don't have the opportunity for short selling, so that isn't home to you. If a company's come up with a good profit statement or good figures, those figures come out before the market opens at 8 o'clock. When the market opens, the shares are already up. So it's no use thinking, oh, I can get in quick before everybody else does. No, I'm afraid you can't. So for most of it, for small investors, the opportunities for buying and selling over the short term are just not there.
Yeah, isn't it funny how people, I mean, let's be honest, all we need to do is take the simple lessons from the most successful investor of all time, Warren Buffett, who says, you know, he doesn't care about the price of the share. He doesn't know where it's going to be, the stock market, today, tomorrow, next month, next year. He doesn't care, and his timeline is forever, holding stocks. He does an investment, and he holds forever. Now, he's the most successful investor of all time. People don't heed that advice. They just think they can do it better by day trading, you know, so it's ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on to some stocks of the day you've been looking at. What have you been looking at today, Rodney?
Well, Burberry is quite interesting. The last profit statement we had from them was saying that trading was slow and it was disappointing in the spring. And although China was pretty strong, they were saying that the Asian markets were slowing down. Well, that has been reconfirmed today. There's a further decline in Asia Pacific, and in particular, a downturn in Hong Kong, and the shares have been quite heavily punished for that. They were already down about a couple of quid from the high, no, £3 in fact. Since February they've dropped £3 on this worries over the slowing trade. They're down again quite heavily today. Now I'm wondering if, in fact, I'm not a fan of Burberry, I'm not invested, but I'm wondering if perhaps the fall in Burberry now has taken into account the slowdown. But one should always bear in mind that one profit warning tends to follow another. There tend to be at least three going, so we may still be in line for more bad news from Burberry. The only thing I would point out is that it's doing well in the Americas. So where one market is down, another market is up. And revenue overall is still up about 8% in the latest quarter. It's 10% before taking account of foreign exchange movements. So investors might like to take a look at Burberry, and you've got to make your own decision. Is this now going to be the bottom of the market? Is the drop a chance to buy in? Or are things not going to get any better? I think it's a very interesting situation, Burberry.
Yeah, and they are. Like I said, you know what, look at the chart there. They were hit sort of just over 19 quid in February this year, and they've generally grinded down to £15. They bounced nicely off that in July, but they bounced up to sort of £16, and they've come back down today, like you said, to £15.85. Yeah. But that £15 seems like a bit of a support level, and like, do you know what, the fundamentals are good. Like dividend yield, you know, forecast to be 2.4%, a dividend cover on that over 2, and the operating margin for a retailer is very good, because they're high end. It's like over 15% operating margin, which is unusual for retailers, normally down by 5% or lower. But you may think whether that's all priced in now, because
there is something that's hidden away in the Burberry statement. Now, usually companies hide bad news away, but a throwaway line in there is that, for certainly for the retail wholesaling side, they've raised their guidance on profits by about £10 million. So, in fact, within this rather disappointing statement, there's an indication that profits actually will be a bit higher than we thought they were going to be. So maybe that's getting overlooked, and perhaps wrongly overlooked.
Yeah, and do you know what? There has been, I know people question the GDP figures from China, but there has been a couple of signals recently that the market over there is stabilising. I mean, house prices are falling. I think they stopped falling, pretty much. They are down, but I think it was down 3% last quarter and the quarter before. So they haven't accelerated. They haven't kept falling, but they've stopped. And so there's signs of stabilisation in that market, and it'll be interesting to see what happens the next year or so, because I know the Chinese government have lowered interest rates 4 times in the last sort of 6 months, so they're trying to stimulate the economy there. So maybe they are going in the right direction. Okay, what's the next company looking at?
Well, Whole Foods.
Halfords. You know what? I own a bike.
Different, yeah.
I own a bike. I cycle to work every day. And my local bike shop is Halfords. And I don't think they're knocking a few years back. But every time I've gone in there, they've been so helpful to me. And literally, if I've got a punctured tyre, they do it there and then. And they've always called me up, said your bike's ready. And last time I went there, they didn't charge me. And I thought, that's quite nice. And I said, I've got nothing but good things to say about Halfords.
I hope they're charging other people, otherwise they won't make much profit.
That's what I thought. I thought on one side of it is a good thing, the other side it's not that good, so yeah.
Yeah, Halfords has done pretty well because cycling does seem to have come back into fashion, and one thing that's helped Halfords is it's selling the more expensive bikes that's got the bigger margins on them. That's been the good thing for Halfords, so people like you can obviously afford to buy the most super duper models. The shares have reflected that to some extent. They were about $4.90 a year ago. They're trading now around $5.50. That's up from $4.23 in January. So they had a good run up to these figures. What does concern me about this is the last statement they gave, which covered the period to the year to 3rd of April. Revenue was up nearly 7%. Well, revenue in the latest quarter is only about 3.6%. So it looks as if sales are slowing. The sales are rather spoiled a bit by the movement of Easter. And I think it would be a good idea if Halfords gave some thought to moving its year-end away from the 3rd of April, because it means some years there's no Easter falls within the year, and some years two Easters fall within it. So it does. Usually retailers avoid this kind of time of year. They usually have their year-ends in January, February, to avoid this kind of distortion. So you have to take that into account. And that makes the figures not quite so bad. But there does look to have been some slowdown at Halfords, albeit there is still continuing growth.
Okay, that's Halfords. Right, what's the last stock you're looking at then, Rodney?
J.D. Weatherspoon also made a trading statement this morning. The shares have been very heavily punished, down about 7.3%. That's about 56p off the share price. Now, Weatherspoon has spooked the markets by having a rant about the Chancellor's announcement in the budget that we're going to have a living wage which would be higher than the current minimum wage, although it's the same thing in a different disguise, and this would be rising from now until 2020. Now, Weatherspoon shares didn't react much to that at the time of the budget, lost about 25p between the budget announcement and the close of play the following day, but much of that had been recovered. Now all of a sudden, reality is dawning. Now surely, I mean, this is an example of how sometimes a stock market can be slow to react and how you do have an opportunity to take action when that happens. Surely we should all have realised that companies paying the minimum wage are going to be hit very badly by any increase in the minimum wage. And J.D. Weatherspoon is saying that they will be badly hit. They're arguing that while supermarkets can sell beer at about £1 a pint, the pubs sell it at £3. And the supermarkets have about 10% of their costs in labour costs, whereas the pubs have about 25% of the cost of labour costs. So it's going to push the gap between the supermarket price and the pub price even wider. And so Weatherspoon, I think, is not going to be the last one to say this. So I start thinking other pubs groups like Green King and Punch, they're going to be similarly affected. But it's not only, because the pubs, it's anybody who employs people who, for example, in support services and property maintenance, those who supply cleaners. These companies are also going to be affected by a rise in the minimum wage. And I think investors might well do to think round some of the other...
Yeah, good point. It's almost like companies on really short, small margins, because J.D. Weatherspoon does play at that lower end of the market where it's cheap and cheerful, isn't it? I suppose you should look around, a good point, then, any other sort of outfit business that operates at that level, like almost like companies like Pound Stretcher or people like this, who, you know, like I said, pay wage, you know? Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So I think Weatherspoon will be the first of many. And it is something that investors should bear in mind if they're taking a decision on whether to buy or sell any particular shares. Think about it. is your company, is this company going to be affected by the rise in the minimum wage? If it is, it's something you've got to factor into your decision. I mean, it's a pity from Weatherstone's point of view, because in the last 11 weeks, the trading statement is of the 12th of July, their year-end is the 26th of July, and in those 11 weeks, sales were up 6.5%. That is a bit slower than the earlier part of the year, so the year so far is about 7.6%. It does, however, admit that operating margins are down, and it says what it said earlier, that the full-year profit is unlikely to be up on last year. So it's a very downbeat statement. It's a slight profit warning, but it's a real run. And when you consider that the brewery industry has been a very keen supporter of the Conservative Party, I think perhaps they're feeling very let down by this Chancellor.
Yeah, look at that share price today. Gap down in the chart today. It opened at £7.46, now down to £7.11. It's a big support level there, £7. Interesting to see if it can hold that or whether it will go below, but I wouldn't put my money on that. Excellent, Rodney. And before we go, we haven't replanned this. Are there any stocks you're looking at the moment that you quite like? Do you think, right, if the time's right, I'm going to invest in that any at all?
I am wondering whether to make further investment in banks. I think that banks will be coming back again. I do have an investment in HSBC, which is showing a fair-sized loss at the moment. So I'm not too worried. I think that will come back. Lloyds, I think, has much further to go. I took a stake in that below the level at which the government could sell it a profit, and I have topped up again just below that level as well. So I've got a nice little profit on Lloyds, but I'm looking for the dividends there. So I think they're good. I'm wondering about the supermarkets. I'm wondering whether it is now time to think in terms of coming back into supermarkets. They've taken quite a bashing. Are we now at the level where they can come back? And I'm also quite interested in oil companies. I do have a stake in Shell. That also is now showing a loss, although that loss has been covered by all the dividends I've had. BP has possibility that it might succumb to a takeover bid at some point. I never buy on takeover rumours. I think you buy on the strength of the company. But that could underpin the BP share price. It's a company that I think still got a lot of problems, but it's now getting the Gulf spill out of its system. Is still too heavily committed to Russia for my liking. But oil companies, I think, could be well worth looking at, because at some point the global economy is going to pick up and oil will come back in demand, and it will go with a whoosh because everybody's cutting back on exploration now, just at a time when perhaps they ought to be stepping up the exploration and getting things to come on stream when the oil price picks up. So someday oil prices will whoosh as well, but we're certainly talking long term.
Marvellous. And just before you go, I saw an interesting article this week in the Telegraph investment section, and it was talking about sectors where dividend growth will be forecast the highest and the lowest. And apparently retailers' dividend growth forecast is down 23%, but banks is going to be up by 23% this year. The dividend is going to go up. And the next section, the sector that's forecast to have the best sort of dividend growth forecast, is oil and gas. So banks and oil and gas, that area of dividends will be quite good.
Well, two of us have come to the same conclusion independently, because I hadn't seen that article, and they certainly didn't know what I was thinking.
Marvellous. Rodney, lovely to speak to you. Speak to you soon.
Always my pleasure.
It's time for the micro macro news. Here's the macro news. The UK unemployment total has risen for the first time in 2 years, according to the Office for National Statistics. The ONS said 1.85 million people were unemployed in the March to May period, an increase of 15,000 from the previous quarter, with a jobless rate at 5.6%. But what's that? 15,000, you know? No graph goes straight up. That's a tiny blip. The ONS also showed that the pace of pay rises continued to pick up. And I think, you know, I've pointed out by Nicola Duke actually on Twitter, saying I think Mark Carney knew these figures before he mentioned about the rate increase yesterday. He must have. The International Monetary Fund has fiercely criticised the bailout deal offered to Greece by the Eurozone. Oh, good timing, guys. Yeah, just when the Greek Parliament are voting whether to pass this very unpopular bill, you wade in and criticise it. And you've had how many years? 5 years to do this? And now you do it right in the last moment, 11th hour, 11.59 minute hour. Ridiculous. Growth in the world's second largest economy, China, has beat expectations in the second quarter, but it was still the weakest showing since the global financial crisis. The economy grew by 7% a year ago, matching growth in the first 3 months of the year, which was the slowest since 2009 when it fell to 6.6%. But, you know, the property market and factory production have hampered the growth. But there's still been stabilisation in these areas, which is a good thing. And I think if this shows, you know, definite signs of stabilisation, then the economies around the world and markets will take off. And it's time for the micro news. Here's the good news. Nahl Group, National Accident Helpline, it was a consumer marketing business, said it continued to trade well during the first half of the year, driven by its personal injury business. Halfords had a solid first quarter against tough comparatives, thanks to premium bikes, children's car seats, and dashboard cameras. StatPro Group said it made good progress during the first 6 months of the financial year, with profits in line with market expectations. Centrica, or British Gas, announced that British Gas will reduce household gas prices by 5%, cutting annual energy bills by about £35 on average. Their share price is up on that day. Manx Telecom said trading in the first half of 2015 was in line with expectations. Norton Gold has said they released an RNS today saying transformational deal. But they've issued shares to acquire 50% interest in the operational control of Republic of Georgia-based Bolnisi Copper and Gold Project. ICAP expects to benefit from improving macroeconomic conditions after reporting an increase in revenue in the first quarter of the year. Live TV and on-demand video content provider Sykic said its trading during the first half of the year was in line with expectations. City of London Investment Group reported an increase in funds under management in the year to end June. Northcote Energy's Luther Moore 20 well has reached a target depth of 5,500 feet and encountered hydrocarbons. Workspace said its total rent roll was up 8.9% in an interim statement. Having said that, going back to Northcote, the share price is down today. I think people are expecting more than they actually discovered there. Tower Resources has raised $5.2 million via share placing to finance the acquisition of the Tally production sharing deal in Cameroon. And Falcon Oil and Gas has begun drilling at its Australian Killala S1 shale well. Here's the bad news. Barclays Deputy Chairman Sir Mike Rake has reportedly resigned from his position to take up a role of chairman at the payments processing company Worldpay. BHP Billiton expects to take a $2.8 billion pre-tax write-down on its US onshore oil and gas business. MoneySupermarket.com said revenue growth had slowed as expected. Talking about BHP Billiton, stock is up today by quite a nice figure, up to over 1%. I'm into those, and I'm scaling as well. Nice dividend. And let's be honest, they're a world player. But that's good news, and also the China thing is good news for them. Entertainment One, owner of Peppa Pig, has fallen by more than a tenth since British investor Marwin has sold down its slice of the firm, I think about 9% worth, I think. Shares in Weatherspoon were down after the company said pre-tax profit was likely to be lower than the year before, and shares in security firm Phalanx have lost more than a quarter after the company reported a pre-tax loss. And finally, Burberry's retail sales grew by 8%, not too bad, you think, in the first quarter of the year, down from 14% growth, though, in the last full year, as the fashion house suffered decline from the Asia-Pacific region and further deceleration into double digits in Hong Kong. Time for the broker forecast. Here's the upgrades. Nomura has initiated coverage of Clarkson with a buy rating. JP Morgan Cazenove has upgraded Wolseley to overweight. Price target £48. Credit Suisse has upgraded Anglo-American to outperform price target £13.50. Berenberg has upgraded Travis Perkins to buy price target £25. Goldman Sachs has upgraded Lonmin to neutral price target 96 pence. Here are the downgrades. And I've got to say, Investec, really, you know, downbeat and pessimistic on a lot of stocks. But starting off with Canaccord Genuity, downgraded Weatherspoons to sell price target £720. They're below that at the moment. I think the support level is about £7. Credit Suisse downgraded Premier Farnell to neutral, price target £175. Goldman Sachs has downgraded Vodafone to neutral, price target £250. Berenberg has downgraded SIG or SIG to hold, price target £210. Here we go with Investec. This is 5 downgrades they've done. Wentworth Resources, hold, price target 35 pence. They downgraded Tullow Oil to sell, price target 170. Upgraded. Wow. Fire Energy to buy, price target 175. But they downgraded Carn Energy to hold, price target 170. And they've also downgraded Amisir Resources to hold, price target 35 pence. That's it for the podcast. By all means, get in contact. Email me podcast@advfn.com. But tell a friend about the podcast. If you like it, if you know someone's into investing, please tell them by all means. And if you can, give me a rating or review on iTunes. 5 stars, please, because I've got 100% 5 star review. And don't forget, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on the podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please do your own research, as it's your own money. Thank you for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.